Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in, everybody. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Turns out, a really nice-looking afternoon after a stormy, rainy start to the day. But, it's been a little steamy, but that's the way it is in June here in the South. Hope everybody doing well. Bill, Dan, our regular Wednesday third, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, part of the 24/7 Sports Network, joining us here in the studio, and Drew is at the controls. So that is the lineup that we have here as we continue to each day. We're back a little bit more in full force. We know today from the outset we have the Drive hotline available. Phone is working. And we apologize, and we appreciate the patience of folks that have been understanding, and I've had comments from quite a few folks that have been listening and said, yeah, they're waiting for the phones to get back. They're back now, and that number to get you through is the same as always. The Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. And again, yeah, it's great to have the phone line back. We're going Larry King style, right? We answer.
Yes. We can't screen. We can't pick up and preview. The calls go directly into the board.
So we find out on the air who's on the line. Who's on the line.
We know when there's a caller. We see it light up. And when you're calling in again, you're not going to hear anyone answer. You're going to hear a sort of a swoosh sound. And that old sound that you used to hear years ago when you'd hear callers be brought onto the air.
And you're on the air.
Yeah, with the switchboard.
Hey,
you're on the board. You're on the board. And then Drew can push a button and put you on the air.
And yes, you will be turned down. And then when you will hear us. You'll be able to hear the programming. You'll be able to hear us. And when we say hello to you or ask, you know, who we're speaking to, that's when you'll be on the air. So we'd love for you to join in. More to talk about today. It's interesting. I mean, the first topic I got, the early Wednesday mornings with Wimp and Barry Sanderson on their show up in Tuscaloosa. And they wanted to talk a little diamond. They wanted to talk about baseball transfer portal. They wanted to talk about softball coaching. And this morning, all I could tell them was, I told them the players that Auburn had that were in the portal, and that we had spent a good bit of time, Jason, on yesterday's show talking about the softball coaching search, which Auburn has now – Auburn now has filled that position. It's actually a co-head coaching situation for Auburn. But as we were saying yesterday, it's a situation where with the transfer portal open, you really want to go ahead and fill the spot, but you want to make sure you get it done right. And an impressive it's strange because it's not one.
Correct.
An impressive
hire.
Of resume. Yeah, an impressive hire by Auburn today in the husband-wife assistant coach tandem from Tennessee.
Yeah, I got word late last night that looked like that was the direction Auburn's going to go. And it's somebody that Philip Marshall's been mentioning for quite a while. But Chris Malvo is someone that obviously very strong resume, and then his wife Kate Malvo too. They've been together, and it's really interesting that they've been at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. They've been at Tennessee, who made a husband-wife group, and Karen and Ralph Weekly work for 20 years. I think in 20 years, they were co-head coaches at Tennessee. They hosted 16 regionals. That's the – I mean, SEC championships, all those things. You host regionals, you got a chance then. You feel like super regional, get to a College World Series. Mm-hmm. They were able to do that pretty consistently at Tennessee. And, you know, the last you know, I think 3 years, they've been at Tennessee with – Karen Weekly,
right?
They've won back-to-back SEC championships. They've been really strong, and I think you look at it. This is, you know, somebody they're very familiar with the league. Been at Missouri, and I think you look at the game and you see the direction of this game. And as we've seen in baseball, I think softball is very similar. Now, if you pitch like Texas right now, and you've only allowed one hit in each of your three games, and pitch three shutouts.
Don't give up a run. You're not going to lose.
You don't need much offense.
But yes, offense.
But right now you got to score some runs.
I mean, right.
Florida went from nothing to almost knocking Oklahoma off by starting to swing the bat. Chris Malvo is somebody who has been really successful in offense. You know, hitting, doing those things, and in recruiting. I think those are two things that you got to do. You got to have better talent, and you got to have more of it. And you got to be able to score runs, and obviously you got to have pitching and all the things that go along with it. I really like the kind of this setup, the way this thing, you know, you go into this. You got to go find a pitching coach, and you got some pieces to fill, obviously. But this is somebody who's been recruiting at a very high level, and now you talk about
in this league,
going to find pieces to fit together. You mentioned transfer portal to add to the roster that you have coming back. What does that look like? Who's still here? It's going to be a pretty interesting next couple of weeks and months, probably.
And it probably seems unusual. It certainly seemed unusual to me when I first heard about this because, I mean, I know there was a husband-wife team in the SEC earlier this decade, but generally speaking in college athletics, you don't envision, you know, your head coach position filled by a husband-wife team.
No, It would need to be, you would expect it would be in a women's sport.
You would think so, but even then that you know, in the SEC at a high level, but both of these coaches, like if Auburn had simply hired Chris Malvo as head coach, I don't think anyone would bat an eyelash based on his resume over the last couple of years. And then Kate Malvo's an extremely accomplished assistant coach as well, and as Jason just said, they know the league, and I've been struck by what seems to be a pretty positive reaction to this hire from some of the Auburn players on social media. Like, I was curious to see how this thing plays with the current roster, and I thought that, you know, you had Axe to you know, just to, you know, as one, yeah. You know, saying this is a, you know, it's a, you know, she seemed to be really in favor of it. A couple of the other players as well, you know, on Instagram and Twitter. So I don't know. It's a curious move, but it's a move that could certainly pay off. And you know, we were just saying yesterday, I would hope that folks are ready to be patient with Auburn's next coach and give them some time to build a roster and compete in what's as tough. I mean, the SEC in softball is as tough as any league.
It's not as tough. It is tougher.
Any sport.
The two teams playing right now are going to be added to the best.
I think you look at it, and there's no sport now in this league that's not as tough as it gets across the country. I think you look and, okay, which one, softball or baseball? And I think right now softball is probably the toughest single league in any sport anywhere in the country. When you look at bringing in Texas and Oklahoma, that's 1-2 in the country, three-time defending national champ. Texas has now played for the national championship 2 out of the last 3 years. And, yeah, you have Tennessee and Florida and Alabama.
Well, every team that fields a softball team in this league made the tournament.
Yeah.
We've got to get Team Malvo on the show, right, Bill? We got to talk to both of them. So welcome and congratulations to news from earlier today that Auburn is bringing in co-head coaches Chris and Kate Malvo coming over from Tennessee.
Yeah, so we jump right in with that because we had some folks asking about it. And as I said, we spent a good deal of time talking about that yesterday afternoon. Like I said, Jason, the other thing, obviously, the Sandersons are very interested in Auburn baseball because the next generation, Jack, is one of Auburn's incoming freshmen. The lefty from Tuscaloosa. But I noticed you had some notes today about some possible targets that Auburn is looking or could be looking at in the transfer portal after a half dozen players enter the portal on the first day on Monday.
Yeah.
Monday.
It officially started Monday. Mm-hmm. And as we sit here on Wednesday, there are already 3,000 some odd baseball players in the transfer portal.
That's with teams still competing.
And that's with 16 teams still playing. Yeah. Yes. And there'll be, I mean, obviously lots of players that are on teams that are finished that might change their mind and do something or still planning on doing something.
Sure. It's only 2 days in.
2 days in, and there's 45 days of it. I mean, it's a 45-day window. I had somebody ask me, said, well, that's not an impressive list. I said, dude, it's 2 days. This is day two of 45.
Should these windows, we talked about this earlier in the week, should these windows open after a champion has been crowned and not after the postseason begins? Because it does seem like
it's tough for the teams that are competing.
And maybe that's the point. Maybe you're trying to give an advantage to the teams that didn't make the postseason versus the teams that did.
I'll still tell you that you ask those teams and they'll say, hey, we're making a phone call from Omaha, Nebraska. Most of these now are Zoom calls to kind of get your foot in the door. A lot of times these don't even take visits because they may be 1 year guys. So yeah, it adds to it. I think the toughest part of this is the stretch that you have in the next month between now and the Major League Draft. But in baseball, it's such a different world to where you're talking about, okay, what's the portal going to look like? You know, and it makes it really difficult because you could say, oh, just go get a couple of junior college guys. Well, if you go get a junior college guy that's too good and he gets drafted, you lose him. This is where the first year or second year college player with experience becomes invaluable because
they can't go to the draft.
A draft risk. And so high school guy's a draft risk. Junior college guy's a draft risk. The first or second year college guy's not a draft risk unless he's a draft eligible sophomore, and there's not many of those.
But now you have the portal, which would be a risk if you're going to lose them, you're going to lose them to the transfer. If you're going to lose
I'm talking about, you know, you've got these guys that are coming back on your roster. You're hoping to bring in these other players. If you start going portal wise, and you know, that's why you've seen it in a lot of places too. It has been guys that maybe haven't done it at the highest of levels that have been transfer guys because they're not as I want to go see you do it against an SEC roster before I draft you in the first round. They may get drafted, but it might be eighth round, and you might say, okay, you wouldn't get you in school. It's just the almost impossible job right now to try to figure out what a baseball roster is going to look like from year to year, and we're sitting here in the first of June.
Yeah. You had a few guys there that you said could be possibilities.
The starting point would be where Auburn has had success.
Yeah.
Auburn had success with Sonny DeShera, coming from Samford, who was a kid who played at Hoover. And Samford has a couple of guys that are already in the portal I think there would be
– that are going to draw interest.
They're going to draw
a
ton of interest because they've been productive guys. One of those is a grad transfer, Garrett Staten, which means – he did not have to wait till Monday to get in the portal. He didn't have to wait till Monday to talk to anybody if he wanted to.
The other one is a second-year player you were talking
Lucas
about.
Lucas Steele. I remember Lucas Steele from the regional here last year. And, I mean, that's a big physical player. He was the SoCon
freshman. He was a freshman last
SoCon
year, right?
SoCon freshman
power
of the year.
Big time.
Yes, and so Garrett Staten has 32 career home runs. Lucas Steele in 2 years has 29 home runs and 112 RBIs. And so this a 6-foot 210 switch hitter. So I think you look at all
and he's played he's played some outfield.
Could be a corner outfielder, could be a first baseman. I think you look at Auburn now and you go, you got Kay Ballou coming back, you got Ike Irish coming back, and you hope Cooper McMurray coming back.
If you've got those three really nice pieces somewhere around the middle of your lineup.
All left-handed.
Yes.
So you're looking for some help from the right side, and that would be two guys that could give you help from the right side, which would be really valuable. And then think about Derek Fabian.
Did we get an answer on Cooper from when he was?
It will all depend on the draft.
Yeah, he's okay. Yeah,
he sounds. I mean, he's definitely considering it.
He loves Auburn. I think Auburn would be in great shape. But I think it all depends on, hey, if somebody says, hey, we want to take you here and here's what we've got for you.
Yeah, he wants to play pro ball. Yeah.
If he's playing college baseball next year, you would think Auburn has it. Were you surprised at Chris Stanfield?
No, I wasn't.
Going into the portal?
Okay. I wasn't. I think
and someone else who has a draft decision to make if he wants to draft eligible.
Draft eligible sophomore. So I think that's a factor in this one. And I think you know, from both sides, I think they're like, hey, maybe fresh start here. I think if you're Auburn, you go like probably have a little bit more productivity offensively at that position. Center field is now a position you go, hey, you got to have more power, some of those things. And I think we thought it was kind of coming from Chris. It just hadn't gotten there yet. So maybe fresh start for both sides. But I do think he's a guy that that will hear his name called in the draft at some point.
You penciling in Cade Ballou as a center fielder?
I think it's a possibility. It depends on what you get out of potential.
Can you get a speedy guy that maybe could be a
potential portal guy?
Potentially, but you were saying the point.
I think he can play center.
If you need to go find some corner outfielders to boost the power.
Right. Yeah.
Cade Ballou at center becomes a really interesting possibility depending on what kind of outfielder.
And Garrett Staten has been a leadoff hitter at Samford, but he's a leadoff hitter that had 19 home runs, 69 RBIs, and batted .319. So that's a guy that gives you some of that. Yeah, if you can find a guy that can run and do some things, then it might open some things up. But Cade Ballou, absolutely, defensively, athletically, could be a center fielder.
You know, he's athletic enough to be a center fielder, but he also profiles as that right fielder. I mean, he's got the arm.
And you look at Texas A&M.
Jace
Lavallette is their center fielder. Yeah. And is like 6'4", 225.
This is computer nerd baseball, but I would really consider Ike in one of the top two spots just to get him as many at bats as possible.
Oh, lineup.
I don't know,
yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, you're talking about finding a speedy leadoff guy, and I get that. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed if you don't have one. Because of his ability to get on base.
I think when they were at their best and everybody was healthy, he was in the two hole.
He was.
Because you had Bobby Pierce healthy and you had Cooper McMurray. And so you had a right, left. And that when they were at their best early in the season, that's the way they did things. But you're right. Nowadays, how do you build it? Do you go, hey, we want to have some guys that can run and bunt, do those things? Or you go, hey, we're going to go and hit home runs. And I think you've got to – you look at the teams left, Tennessee, Texas A&M. I think we talked about it this year. Arkansas pitched really, really good. Offensively, they weren't good enough. They're still sitting at home. And so I think you look in baseball, softball, I think for the most part, pitching's always going to be important, but you better go score some runs because sooner or later you're going to have one of those games.
I used to listen to a lot of like Angels baseball, and the debate would be when you've got a Pujols or a Trout or an Ohtani. Like even though like the traditionally you want them in the three or the four with runners on base to get them, you know, to get RBIs, you know, when they get extra base hits. A lot of people are saying, hey,
you want your best hitters to get more at bats,
get them as many at bats as possible. And if that means, you know, if that means you should be leading off Pujols in an Angels uniform,
I think especially if you have other guys that are run producers, then I think, but we saw it in the super regional, not super regional, the regional final for LSU. They wound up hitting Tommy White in the leadoff spot. Like, look, we're just going to put him back up there and put him in the leadoff spot. I think there's certain guys that can do that. Ike handles the bat so well. I think he could do that. And here's the thing. He runs okay. And he's not a
he's
bad
not a
li- runner.
Yeah, not a liability. No,
he's not a guy that's clogging
and
the bases.
So I think you could do that if you needed to. But Garrett Staten's a guy, if you were to get a guy like that, could be a potential leadoff guy. And obviously, that's just a few guys. I think you look at needs, and I think right-handed power is going to be a need for them, especially from the portal side.
Pitching.
And then pitching, I think a couple of lefty arms that are experienced because you're losing some left-handed arms. Obviously, Tanner Bauman's gone. Zach Crotchfeldt not returning. can you find a couple of lefties that can do it? And then, you know, Cam Tilley's a guy they believe is going to step in and be a weekend starter. But I think you got to go find somebody that has done it, proven it, and you know, been there, done that as a legitimate weekend starter to come in. And who that could be, those are people that everybody's looking for. Can you find the guy? Can you, you know, make enough of a deal to get that guy on campus and be a part of it? That is that's something that obviously they're going to focus on a whole lot in the next couple of weeks.
We're just getting started here on the Wednesday Drive. Jason Caldwell with us. You with us for the whole hour?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. We'd love for you to join in again. The phone lines are back and working. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
What's up, guys? This is 390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 25 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, got Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in as well. You heard the number 334-321-1390, or you can text us on the Drive text box. 334-564-1840. Jason, a busy weekend. I heard you mentioning as before we were coming on. Yeah, it's one of the busier like 2 weeks that you're going to have especially as far as football recruiting is concerned.
Yeah, it starts. It actually started last weekend with mm-hmm. a group of official visits. I actually have an official visitor on campus right now, DB from Ravenwood High School up in Tennessee, that's on campus right now. The next 2 days will be absolutely loaded, 7-on-7 on campus. Yeah. And this is team 7-on-7. So this is a high school team that comes in, and it's your quarterback, your wide receivers, your coach is calling plays against another team's defense, and then you swap. And these are my favorite 2 days in terms of camp days. I love watching the teams play because you get to – you can watch a guy do one-on-ones. You go, hey, to watch a guy go compete and catch touchdowns and see how that – to me, that's always kind of that standout thing where y'all go, okay, that's next level. So these next couple of days, got then official visits next couple of weeks as well, a bunch of them. So it's going to be a really busy time. But, you know, again, you kind of keep getting guys on campus, keep doing those things, working towards that big cat at the end of July – then seeing what the – because it's almost two recruiting periods now. It's what happens before August, really. Mm-hmm. Guys, and then what happens towards December if there's anything left. But most all of the top guys before the end of the summer are going to be making decisions. And just found out one of those today, Anquan Fagans, a new boy from – Thompson.
He's going
to
do
High
it just
School.
Before August.
Just before August, a couple of days after Big Cat weekend on July 29th, he is going to make his decision. Auburn, Clemson, Georgia, Miami. Is that the other one? No.
I
can't remember who it is. I'll look in a second. But LSU. This is one of the top safeties in the country. His older brother, Anquan Fagans Jr., recently walked on at Auburn. He's on campus. He was out there working with camps the other day. Charles Kelly's a guy that's known this family for a long time. They have a great relationship. Fagans is originally from Calhoun County area, was at Oxford for a while. So Braden Joyner, Antonio Kite, Sylvester Smith, all those guys and Quan Fagans have known each other for a long, long time. So there's a lot of connections for him. But that's something coming later in the summer. A whole lot of visits between now and then.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, 8 officials, I guess, this past weekend. And, you know, we'd told people don't expect there to be a flurry of commitments because these kids are going to be camping and visiting around, but it's good to get them in, and it sounded like things went really well.
I thought it was a really good weekend. Caleb Cunningham was probably the one for me when I think about that jumped out to me, him talking about
Auburn being at the top
and almost committing. I asked him, I said, did you get close? He goes, yeah, I got close. Now, will that hold off? It was the first time he's really had an official visit, but he's visited a bunch of places. And official visits are different. But I think he's also a little different, too. I think he's small town. The Auburn feel was important to him. He bonded with those wide receiver groups. And it's something that I've kind of probably the last 8 to 10 years noticed a little more. For a long time in recruiting, you got your guy, and then you're like, eh, we're not going to get another top guy for maybe a couple of years. We'll focus at other positions. And now you look and you go, no, other top guys, they want to play with other guys. They want to play with – because it's about competition. It's about the more the better. We've seen a wide receiver. We've seen the running back. Heck, nowadays, signing a quarterback doesn't preclude you from getting another good one the next year.
No, I mean, you can – thing is, look at what Alabama has done year after year after year. Georgia is doing. Correct. I mean
– that's it.
They continue to bring them in. And, you know, if things don't work out, they don't work out. But it's a much better situation to have too many. You can't have too many good players.
I still cringe – at the thought and thinking about, oh, we're not going to sign another quarterback next year. We got,
because we're fine, we're set.
That is not a possibility. You have to go
even
get
if
guys.
There weren't the transfer portal and the correct situation.
You don't ever know. You better go get a guy. The entire goal, and I've heard Hugh Freeze say it, and the other coaches say it too. The goal is you better go get the next guy that can beat out that guy. That's the goal.
You're always trying to make your roster better. However you can do that.
Yes.
Do you envision a scenario where there's a high school class where Hugh Freeze doesn't take a quarterback?
No.
I
think he's going to take a high school quarterback every year.
Every year.
I believe. There may be a year where we go, hey, it didn't kind of work out. I feel like that's going to be a thing every year. And, hey, legitimate – go after five-star wide receiver multiple in every class.
I mean, that was when people were arguing for Auburn to hire Hugh Freeze. That was one of the arguments, right? That Hugh Freeze is someone with a track record of turning his school into a destination for the best receivers coming out of high school. He did it at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss did not – I'll defer to you on this, Jason. Ole Miss did not have a tradition of signing the best receivers
in
high school football before Hugh Freeze got there and signed a slate of them.
Eli Manning turned a couple of guys into pretty good receivers when he was there. I mean, they had a couple of guys that turned out to be pretty good receivers, but a lot of it was because of what they did. No, that has not been historically – I mean, you think about it, historically, Auburn and Ole Miss are probably the two of the schools that had maybe the fewest of those – types of wide receivers. Ole Miss has had a whole lot more than Auburn now. I mean, it's not even close. Largely because of the guys that Hugh Freeze coached and recruited and brought in that span. We're just talking about it. There's certain things that you got to have in this day and age. Baseball and softball, you better have people that hit the ball over the fence. 3-run home run erases a whole lot. The 15 single games are hard to win in this day and age. It don't matter how many, unless you have all of them and bunch them up in about three innings. In football, you better be able to hit the home run in the passing game. You got to be able to do it because it is hard to have 15 play drives and score touchdowns. And so I think we saw it last year with Caleb Cunningham. It's one of those things. You look at the tight end position, brought in Texas commitment at tight end. They're still recruiting big-time guys.
Yeah, they want to sign like three tight ends.
Three tight ends, and that's a position that is a weapon now in the offense. And so
defenses were playing Auburn 10 yards and in, right, sometimes last year.
It was I dare you, we're going to play you, man. I dare you do anything else.
And he had a couple big plays with VAR, down the field, off of those kind of looks.
It's really interesting that the games they struggled the most were the teams that said, we're going to take away the run and do that. Whereas, the Alabamas and Georgias and other teams are like, we don't have to do – we're good enough. We can just play kind of the New Mexico States of the world. And other teams are said, look, we're going to attack the run game and we're going to take our chances in the pass game. That's when – I mean, you think about Auburn, Georgia, they ran the ball, and Peyton ran the ball, and they did some things. Those other teams just said, look, if they can't do that, they're not beating us, and they dared you to do something else. Now you got the ability to go, Okay, well, you do that. We're going to throw it up to some of these guys in one-on-one situations, and now you have the ability to win some of those. That's a must in today's game.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. We've got a couple of more segments with Jason Caldwell here on the Wednesday Drive.
6-7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, and we have a call on the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Hey, go ahead. You're on the air. Who are we talking to? Hello?
Hello?
Hey, go. Yeah. You're on the drive. How are you doing?
All right, this is John in Prattville.
Hey, John.
Hey, this is how we're doing it now, John. You're on the air.
For the time being, yes. We had an electrical surge when the storm came through Memorial Day and it knocked out the phone. So we're back and able to bring you on the air, but we can't screen calls. It just sort of brings you in so we don't know who we're talking to. So welcome in.
All right. Good to be here. Good to hear y'all. I was going to ask y'all about the new coach. I don't know that he was on anybody's bingo card. I'm sure he's qualified, but I was thinking that didn't a long-time Alabama gymnastics coach, I believe her husband was her top assistant for years and years, mm-hmm. but she was the coach, and he was the assistant. So I'm not sure how you get two co-head coaches out of a head team. There can only really be one voice on the head of a team, in my opinion. So
yeah, how that works out. Yeah, I mean, I think there'll be one, well, and I would guess it would be Chris Malvo would probably be the one that would have more of a say. That's just my guess. As I said, though, Tennessee softball, Karen Weekly is the head coach. Her husband was a co-head coach for 20 years, and they won 16 regionals and hosted 16 regionals and have been a powerhouse in college softball, and that was the husband and wife combination. So it has worked. We'll see how it works. My guess is if they go out and recruit enough good players, it'll work just fine because that's going to be the key. You got to go out and improve a roster. But
you get two birds with one stone as far as going to different alumni clubs and recruiting, I guess, two for one.
Yeah, I guess you could one to one place, one to another. You also have gotten two of your spots on your coaching staff. And this way – it's a way of assuring, I mean, Kate's very highly thought of as well, to keep any possibility of Tennessee, like going, if you just went after Chris, try to keep Tennessee from trying to keep Kate there at home and keeping the couple apart.
All right, I've got one other question for you. I was looking at my upcoming basketball tickets, and last year they were $600, $1,200 for the pair. This year they're $775 a piece. That's a $175 jump per ticket since last year.
I have not. You know what? I haven't gotten my basketball stuff yet. So I'm faculty staff, so I haven't gotten mine. But I'm not stunned. Obviously not going to be happy.
I don't think they're going in the other direction anytime soon, John.
Yeah, you're right.
So I was just wondering. I mean, that's the stadium.
That's better than a 25%. It's better than a 25% increase. That's pretty significant.
The stadium's roughly 10,000 or just short of 10,000.
Yeah, it's so under 10.
That's basically $1 million or more than $1 million revenue increase for the stadium. Yeah, so I don't think any of that might be going to backdoor NIL, or is just the increased maintenance? I'm not sure.
As of now, it can't go backdoor, but we'll see what happens.
It could go facility-wise.
But, yes, well, here's the thing. That's just that increase. Those ones down on the court side, if they increase by that much, it'll be more than $1 million increase.
Yeah, you're right.
And maybe, on the NIL front, I mean, Bruce Pearl has said that, a lot of the donations need to be going to NIL rather than to – directly to the program or to facilities and things, but some of that could be offset.
Yeah, that's
by
what I'm thinking. This
ticket
is
price
probably,
increases.
Yeah,
you know
absolutely. That. Yeah, so now I'm looking forward to getting that email, John.
Yeah, I haven't bought my football season tickets yet either. I'm over by the student section.
Okay, so, I've already got those. When are the basketball tickets due?
They had a 3-month, $200 a month payment plan. So, and that started
June, July,
May,
August,
so,
something like that. Then,
so The deadline is probably August 31st.
Yeah, probably. Okay. Yeah. So I'll be getting that soon.
All right. I appreciate y'all's time. Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. Again, I'm not surprised. I don't think they went up for a couple of years. So I was expecting that to happen. I didn't know that, what the number would be.
And I know somebody talking about football, they said they went up, but you also have an extra home game.
They did.
And somebody else was talking about that from a parking pass standpoint on campus. They're more expensive. And, again, you have an extra game.
Mm-hmm. You got a new scoreboard to pay for, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I've had people have mentioned that. And, like, what are they doing? I was like, you know what I said? In the last 10 years, I've probably had more people complain about that old scoreboard than anything else in that stadium.
And especially if you're somewhere where you can't see the new one.
I was going to say, you know who's got it the worst? And we just took a call from someone who sits by the student section.
Yeah.
And
and anybody around there. You're
I happen
family.
To know some people. If your back is to the main video board, So much of the broadcast now, so much of the in-game experience involves the giant video board on that side of the end zone. I do think
if you're in the press box.
If you're in the press box.
Or
if you're in my family's seats under the upper deck where all you see is the bottom third of the scoreboard.
We complained to Riley enough, and we got the Tron feed on some TV monitors in the press box now. So we get a little more included that way. But no, I do think that's I was kidding about the scoreboard being a big factor in the price increase.
But I'm sure it's not the first time Jason's heard that either. Though I'm sure people feel like, that's where it's going.
And this is your last chance to see the old one, at least, because I believe 25. You're 25.
How long has that scoreboard been there?
I think I remember them updating it
in the 80s, maybe.
Yeah, because there was where the scoreboard is now. You had the two tigers with the noise meters on the other side, and then that scoreboard. I will say this: I've had several people ask me, what are they going to do with that old scoreboard? It is not as small as you think it is.
No.
People think it's just, you can hang it in a
restaurant. I put it in my backyard.
No, it is massive. It's just in a really massive place, and it doesn't look very big, but it really is.
You think they could find a home for it over on the Walt? You know, somewhere on the property of the Walt, you find a spot for the old...
I don't know where it... unless
practice field?
It would engulf one of those ends of a practice field. It is really big. It's way bigger than people think it is.
It's just
just doesn't look very big up
there.
Yeah,
you don't get an awful lot of it. I mean, it's not a video board. It doesn't.
No,
you're not having scores. Maybe
one of the frats would want it.
Here's the hope. Right. Well, again,
the backyard.
You'd have to give it across two or three of backyards.
SAE's got a pretty big backyard.
Here's the hope. The hope is that it makes it through the season because there are no parts. That's the whole
reason. When you've got something that old, no.
There are no parts to fix.
The companies that replaced the parts
probably aren't in business anymore.
They're long gone.
Yeah.
So
you can't call Radio
Jack. We were about to both go to Radio Jack on that.
Yeah, so if something were to go wrong, then you would have a big shade tree on one end zone. That's all you have for a while.
Bring in a Wrigley Field manual when somebody go out and hang up the numbers.
Oh, man.
Have the big clock with the minute.
I think about those Michigan Notre Dame games where you had the clock, and again that does bring you back to this craziness that we're seeing where there's now all these 2-minute warnings and things. That's why that was done, because there wasn't a clock. We have a clock now. We don't need a 2-minute warning.
TV networks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and we got the playoff schedule. By the way, I'm thinking that if something breaks, they just put a tarp over it like a car.
Yeah, that's right. Like a car in the yard. Like we did in 30s. You're not using it? Just tarp it. Let's get to break, and then we'll talk a little bit about the announcement today. We know the dates and sites for the playoffs for year one of the 12-team playoff. We'll do that again if you'd like to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
What's it mean to be a Four Seasons Federal Credit Union?
Back on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment of hour number one. Our final segment with Jason Caldwell. We had a great little segment there during the break. Let's see if we can reenact that. No, we were just talking about today the official announcements on the dates and sites of the first playoffs as the games will start. It'll start with one game on December 20th.
Friday night.
Yes.
Friday, December 20th, there will be a game Friday night on ABC and ESPN. Saturday, there will be two playoff game Saturday, December 21st. There will be two afternoon playoff games on TNT. And then the fourth first-round game will be Saturday night on ABC and ESPN.
I believe they're going to be at 11-3 on TNT.
Yes.
And then 7 o'clock will be the third.
And the two games on TNT will go up against NFL games scheduled that same day, Houston, Kansas City, and Baltimore, Pittsburgh, the two NFL games that will go up against the college football playoff that first weekend.
And what we were talking about here during the break is the next set of games, our traditional bowl games, will be in traditional bowl game slots on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, but that is 10 days after, and it makes those games on a Tuesday and Wednesday.
Do you think the game should be played on Saturday the 28th, a week later?
Is that, I do, and I did not realize until Dan looked it up. There are no NFL games on that Saturday the 28th. I don't think that college teams need those extra 3 days to be getting ready for that next opponent. I mean, smaller schools don't. In the D2 playoffs, the FCS playoffs,
no.
they don't get extra time, and they've done fine.
And there's a lot of time to get ready for those.
Absolutely,
yeah. There's some time off, and so yeah, I don't know. You're right though. There's one linchpin to this whole thing. It's the Rose Bowl.
Absolutely, it is.
It's the Rose Bowl going. Hey, we're going.
We got to be played on New Year's Day.
The four quarterfinal games are tied in with traditional bowls. December 31st, which is a Tuesday. That's New Year's Eve. The Fiesta Bowl will be that night, 7:30. That's the first of the four quarterfinal games in the college football playoff. New Year's Day, you've got the Peach Bowl at 1 o'clock, and then the Rose Bowl in its traditional 5 o'clock spot, and then the Sugar Bowl will complete the triple header. So a triple header of college football playoff games, the quarterfinals on New Year's Day. That's a Wednesday, Peach Bowl, Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl.
Let me ask you, so are the other bowl games that have normally been played New Year's Day, are they going to move them? Because something should move.
We have seen that happen
to that 28th. Because it would really, you talk about. I mean, they're not going to be very drawing near as much interest. But if they're being played at the same time,
I would guess,
as quarterfinals are being played, they're completely useless.
I don't have it right in front of me. I would guess that Saturday the 28th is a busy day for bowls.
But I mean, you know, things like the Capital One,
the Orange and the Cotton are the semifinals.
Right, but I'm
so those have been moved to later in January.
But the other ones that we normally see on New Year's Day, that's absolute murder for them if they have to. I think we have a caller. Before we run out of time, we'll see if we can get back to the phones. Hi, you're on the air. Hello. I think we lost him. Give us a call back again. We don't have quite the same warning system that we had before, but yeah, Jason. I mean, it is a full month from the opening games of the 12-team playoff to the championship game is on January 20th.
Yeah, so many things that don't make sense. And when the NCAA is involved and it's TV involved too,
mm-hmm.
there's lots of things that don't make sense. So this is one of those things. I'm just looking at, like super regionals for baseball this weekend.
Right.
You have games that are being played, you know, across the country. And part of that, West Virginia was one of the last teams that played across the country. They play Friday against North Carolina, who was the last team to finish, I believe, one of the last teams to finish. And they're playing the first day.
Yeah, they were, I think, the last.
And the things like that don't make much sense to me. And then you have Texas A&M playing at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the first day. And then you have a Chapel Hill regional at 6 o'clock. You have Lexington at 6 o'clock, who's in the Eastern time zone. Why wouldn't you flip those and have the Central time zone where it's going to be 1,000 degrees playing
right
at night? They're just little things that never make
that
sense.
It could be common sense, it
correct
seems like.
Correct. And it gets back to this. Common sense would be, let's don't have this thing drug out. I just saw it the other day in Georgia high school football. Decides to not play on a weekend because of the Georgia Tech games on a Friday, which means they skip a week.
They pushed everything back.
They start playing high school football games on August 16th. And they're going to be playing their championship games on December 18th, 1 week before the Christmas. So they're going from August 16th playing games to December 18th.
That is crazy. Jason, we love having you here. Let everybody know, what they can look for and how they can keep up with everything.
Yep, a lot of things going on. AuburnUndercover.com, part of the 24/7 network, and can also follow me on Twitter at ITATJason.
All right, Jason, thanks again. Have a great week.
Y'all too.
All right, we'll be back, Dan and I, back with hour number two here of the Wednesday. And Dan Drew at the controls here on this Wednesday afternoon. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us for the entirety of hour number one. Some great stuff from him as we talked about Auburn announcing co-head softball coaches today. Chris and Kate Malvo coming from Tennessee, where they were part of back-to-back SEC regular season champs. And Chris Malvo, very, very highly thought of hitting coach and a proven big-time recruiter. Kate, also a very highly thought-of coach as well. So Auburn with co-head coaches with a husband-wife team coming in there for softball. That's something we had talked about that a good bit yesterday, Dan. I mean, the timing was, you know, you're getting a little nervous because you've got players in the portal and rosters are being changed. And as we said yesterday, can't expect to be adding players when you don't know who the head coach is. Well, now you know who two of the coaches on the coaching staff are with the co-head coaches and Chris and Kate Malvo. And we'll see how quickly Auburn goes about, some roster adjustments.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's an off-the-board move. I don't think anybody had a husband-wife team as the next head coach of Auburn softball, but the Malvos were a big part of Team Malvo was a big part of the of the success at Tennessee over the last couple of seasons. Tennessee, I believe, the best team in the SEC this past year. This is a guy with a totally legitimate resume in Chris Malvo.
Yeah,
and
now I know Philip Marshall had mentioned Chris for sure. Yeah. When we ran down that first list that we talked about more than a week ago, when Auburn's season was done, Chris Malvo was one of the names that Philip Marshall, who really has followed Auburn softball as probably more closely than anyone in the media, had mentioned his name. But I guess nobody was thinking about a situation sort of like Tennessee, as Jason said. Tennessee had the situation with the weeklies for I guess 19, 20 years.
Yeah, and we're in no position to give the Malvos advice on how to build a winning program here, but it does seem like in the post NIL era, Bill. I mean, yes, you can attempt to build your program by finding the players that the rest of the conference doesn't know about. You can try to go find, you can try to be first on players, or you can try to, you know, identify the diamonds in the rough, the needles in the haystack, the ones that can emerge, even though people don't necessarily think that they can. It feels a lot easier to just win NIL recruiting battles, right? For the players that everybody agrees are the absolute best players, and that's where it gets into can you, as a head coach of a I guess it's also true of football and men's basketball, but it's, you know, just about anyway. Can you get the money faucet flowing?
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to be competitive. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, or the average numbers or anything like that for every sport, but you need to be competitive. But one thing that I think is a very big positive for Auburn is that Chris Malvo is known as an excellent recruiter. So, I mean, if he has, you know, the wherewithal to do so, he should be able to pull in very quality players.
Yeah, and I don't want this to seem like I'm slamming the door on mid-major coaches, because I think that there are excellent coaches at the mid-major level in virtually every sport in college athletics, you know, ready to move up and get their chance. But this is a situation where I think you're happy that you're getting someone with experience at a program like Tennessee, right, who knows the lay of the land, not just in the SEC, but also what is expected at a major conference program, how you land the kind of talent that a place like Tennessee gets. Like, I think it's not you've had situations at Auburn and elsewhere where a coach has stepped into a situation, a coach has stepped into the role, and you've wondered, boy, did they have the requisite experience in all the different areas? Did they know what they were getting into at a big-time program? I think the Malvos know what they're getting into.
Oh, yeah. They've been in the SEC for a few years at Missouri before they were at Tennessee for the last few years.
Yeah, it's not the concern with Team Malvo isn't do they know what they're getting into at Auburn. It's, you know, can they make it work with whatever plan they decide to implement. But that's, you know what? That's a different problem, and it's probably a better problem to have than do they know what they're getting into. But there's really that's something where there have been hires in the SEC where you wonder, does this coach know what they're getting into? And I think in the case of the Malvos, like they seem to know what they're stepping into.
Yeah, and as we said, I mean, you know, Tennessee had the situation with Karen Weekly and her husband Ralph were co-head coaches for 20 years till he retired in 21, and she has stayed on as the head coach. So, I mean, it's not as though it's something unprecedented or even unprecedented in this conference. So that is the big local news here today. Jason also talked with us about baseball, the transfer portal, and some things, some players that Auburn might be interested in. We were talking about the dates and sites set for the college football playoff. I was wondering about the bowl games that are normally played on New Year's Day. You know, the Florida Bowls that are usually played New Year's Day. You know, the Gator Bowl, the Citrus Bowl, the Outback Bowl, or whatever their sponsors have become over the past few years. What has become of those? And we attempted to look them up because I was thinking they would just be almost committing suicide if they're going up against the college football playoff games there on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. We can't find any dates that have been set. The NCAA itself, when it released the 2024-25 college football bowl schedule, only released the playoffs. So I'm wondering if they're just going to leave it to ESPN since they've got the rights to all those games. Hopefully some of those, or maybe all those games, would be moved to the weekend before, which is where I was saying that would be a good time for the second round of the playoffs to be a week after. You know, that'd still give you 7 or 8 days after the first round, but you're dealing with the NFL playoffs.
Well, I think ESPN's still going to want weeknight programming during bowl season. I mean, that's still like a traditional thing that they play up in December, and so they're going to want some.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure, you know, once
inventory.
Yeah, once we get into the second half of December, I'm sure they're going to want one or two bowl games every night if they can swing it. And then, I mean, but it does seem like that December 28th Saturday would be a great time to play some college football bowl games, because
if not the playoffs, there'd better be some then.
Yeah, we know there won't be playoff games that day, having gotten the schedule. So I mean, you figure, you know, that'd be a good time to play the bowl games that would traditionally be played on January 1st, that may be overwhelmed or overshadowed by the or New Year's Eve, for that matter. You know, those bowl games could move to December 28th. That feels like an opportunity, because there's no NFL that day, and the college football playoff games are staying on their they're being played on December 20th and 21st, and then moving with the quarterfinals are moving to are going to be played on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
All right, so we can talk about that and much more. We'd love to hear from you. Our phones are back in case you haven't been with us. We have the phones, but it's going to be a little different when you call in. It will ring. It should. When it is your turn, the phones are deciding that now. We're not even picking when, but no, you will hear a connecting sound, which is something that if you're a longtime radio listener, years ago you'd hear this.
Now, do we have any way of knowing
Larry King or anybody would bring a caller?
Because we went to a call earlier, they'd hung up. Do we have any way of knowing if they're still on the line?
We do not.
Okay, so this will be a fun.
We do not. We know that we had a call just as we started hour number two, and let's see if we still have the caller.
Pull back the curtain,
caller. You're on the air. Hey, who are we talking to? Hello,
caller. You're on the air. I hear something.
Maybe
it's the radio.
Maybe they called this number thinking they're calling somebody else.
Caller, we're
sure.
Going to give you like two more seconds here.
I think the phone may be in the pocket right now.
That's too bad. All right, well, call us back.
All right, we do know how to hang up on this end. We learned that.
We did
yesterday.
Learn that one.
But yes, all right, our phone lines are working.
That one during Texas
working.
Call.
So yes, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
All right, I think we have the same caller back that didn't realize that he was on. All right, again, let's head to the Drive hotline and go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi guys, it's Jeff. I guess I'm on the air.
Yeah, we got you now, Jeff. Yeah, that's it. It is. It's strange. It's going to be until we get the system back. It's been sent off, the system that we had. The only way we have of doing this right now is when you call in, it directly connects, and we don't have any way of screening it, knowing who we have on the line.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
but you're on.
Good. All right, you guys doing all right?
Yeah, it's great to hear from you.
Okay, good. Been a minute. I heard encouraging news today about Batty, you know, that's encouraging.
Yeah, we have not discussed that. His family saying that he's off the ventilator.
Yes.
He had a tracheotomy, and there's been some movement, and that is great news.
Hallelujah. Well, with that, any idea who may fill that role? I know we got a lot of young kids that return. Or man, that guy was exciting on the return team.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting. I mean, there are options there as a kickoff returner. I think Jeremiah Cobb is a guy who's going to get, you know, he was going. I think everyone was excited about seeing more of him this year, but I think this opens the door for him to get even more opportunities.
Yeah, Keontae's handled the bulk of the punt return work over the last 2 years. I do wonder if they would look at Keontae Scott for kick return duties as well, although they've gone elsewhere there. And he plays a pretty big role in the defense, so maybe they'd want to look elsewhere there. Jeremiah would be a fine option. Jarquez has done a lot of kick returning in his career. I think any of the receivers – Bryce Kane is an explosive, explosive guy off the ball. Maybe they'd want to see what he looks like back there. I think there's Caleb Burton can really move. I think they would have a couple of options to look at there. Although I'm glad you called, Jeff, and mentioned the good news with Brian Batie from down in Sarasota.
Yeah, I never want to forget. You know, we know it's a tragic situation. Never want to forget his family. His mom put out a statement a couple of days ago. I don't know if you guys saw that. It was such heartfelt statement she put out, thanking everybody for the prayers and the thoughts.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just almost unimaginable the suffering, pain, and suffering that family is going through right now. But it's great to see some good news.
Yeah, big War Eagle family. And one other question, Bill. A few weeks ago, we discussed that. Mentioned about the late Jim Fice and Bramlett. Any other thought about doing some call takes on his greatest calls, you know, in our dark days of summer upcoming? I would love to hear that if you could coordinate that.
Yeah,
that would be fabulous. I'll
jump in here for a sec, Jeff. We're barely on the air after the last couple of weeks. We're working on getting the audio back, and I think call, you know, Jim Fife and Rod Bramlett calls would be
absolutely
would be wonderful. We'll see what we can do. You know, digging up. I think that would be, you know what, Andy would probably have access to more of the protein than I mean, just I can't. I mean, I guess we have. I mean, we do know a couple of people here at the station.
There are a few things in the vault around here that we can get to. But yes, that was a great idea, Jeff, and definitely something that would be. Not only fun, but I think very entertaining. And would feel good as well to be able.
The other thing I'd be a little worried about there would be, I know War Eagle Plus is trying to incorporate archived broadcasts and older stuff into they're putting some of that stuff behind the paywall.
Right.
So they may not want, but maybe they will.
Well, you've got access to Jim's greatest calls.
That's true. That's true. And you know what? Maybe they'd want us to give a little taste of what they've got, you know, behind the paywall to the audience as well. We can, you know, we know a few people over there at War Eagle Plus. So maybe we'll talk to them too.
Yeah, amongst the two calls I remember, and then I'll let you go. The 82 game and the 87 game at Georgia Tech. I get chills when I hear him calling that.
Yeah, Tillman, yes.
Oh, absolutely. My God, I could just say that forever.
Yeah, that's great.
Wow, is he ever going to not say Tillman? I mean, it was just unbelievable to hear that.
Oh, you're not kidding. Yeah, great, great stuff, Jeff. Glad you called.
Thank you, guys.
And I'm glad he could call. That's really good. Yes, yes, we're very glad. And again, mentioned it yesterday, how – so appreciative of how hard Terry Harper and, you know, Riley and Ben and Jacob, everybody been working to try to get as many things working so that it sounds close to what you are expecting.
No, really, really appreciate the hard work from everybody here at Auburn Network, not complaining at all. And also want to say thanks to the listeners for bearing with us after the electrical storm last week jarred some of the equipment loose.
Oh, absolutely. All right. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
At Reynolds Outdoors, be a part of the drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Yeah, we're just lamenting. Braves pounded today by the Red Sox. 9-0. Hit. The Braves were one hit today.
They're
8 games over .500, which I mean is nothing to it's nothing to laugh at or anything, but they're just okay now. They don't hit the ball very well, with the exception of, you know, Marcelo Ozuna is really the only guy who is hitting the ball well for the Braves. Jared Kelenic left the game today, but they x-rays I think proved negative.
Fourth in the National League in wins. Only two teams in the East that are over 500.
But lately, they're a .500 team since, you know, obviously you lose Ronald Acuna after you've already lost Spencer Strider. It's very, very tough.
I think, we talked about the deadline a little bit yesterday, and I think teams in the National League are going to have interesting decisions to make. I mean, there are only 1, 2, 3, 4 teams in the National League over 500.
Oh,
at the moment.
Yeah. Who was the other one? Arizona was the other one.
San Diego is exactly 500. Now. They're okay. At 500 now.
There's only four. That's what I said on Monday. I said there were only 5 over, and now it's down to 4 over.
Yeah. Cubs are a game under 500 now. Cardinals are 2 games under 500. Pirates are 4 under 500. Giants are 4. I mean, you've got teams that are hovering in that line, but it's Philadelphia. They're 8 games up on the Braves, 15.5 up on the Nationals in third place in the East.
That tells you something right there. The Nationals are in third place in the East.
Well, it ain't the Mets and it ain't the Marlins.
I know.
I mean,
the Mets are behind the Nats.
I mean, Colorado's sitting there, you know, at the bottom of the National League. I think, understandably, with the pitching they've got, although they don't.
Yeah, and I see Sean Bouchard left with an injury today.
Well, he stole the base too, but
that's what happened.
Well, okay. Well, he'll be. That's maybe Tolley is back up soon for Bouchard. It's a Braves season where I think the expanded playoff helps a little bit to avoid the urgency to be in that. I mean, you needed to be in that fourth spot. Not that long ago, or earn that fourth, fifth spot to advance, and now a couple more teams get in, but it's still a Braves team that probably needs to. I mean, you want to see more production out of the top guys, the proven.
Yeah, the middle of the order guys.
You were Olson and Riley.
Matt Olson got hot for a little bit, but he's just sort of struggling along at 230. Austin Riley has not really. I mean, he hasn't hit. All year. He missed some time with an injury. He's been back. Ozzie Albies went like a month without a homer. The Braves aren't they aren't scoring a lot of runs. They aren't hitting very much.
I was going to say, how's Ozzie doing? Is Ozzie
250 with 3 or 4 with 4 homers.
Okay.
He hit 30-something last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. You've got 3 players, those 3 guys, Olson, Riley, and Albies, hit over 100 home runs combined between the 3 of them. And I think Olson may have 9 or 10 now, but Riley's got like 5 and Albies has 4. So, I mean, they're not getting it, not getting what you would expect done from guys who should be in their primes.
You know, and the Dodgers were the team, especially after the Ohtani trade. I think people were saying, a lot of National League teams don't want to make moves because they want to get out of the way of the Dodgers, this inevitable Dodgers team. Dodgers are, they've been good, 38-14,
yeah,
30-24,
yeah.
To start the season.
They got one hit last night.
Run support has been a problem, especially when
and they get Paul Skeens tonight.
When Glasnow's been out there, run support has been a huge problem. Yep. I think it's four or five straight games where he has not gotten a run of support from the Dodgers, Bill. Like four or five games in a row.
From that lineup?
For Tyler Glasnow.
That's hard to believe.
And so even teams.
The top of that lineup, I mean, with Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Ohtani.
Will Smith.
Yeah. You're right. The top of that order should match any 4 that you're going to find.
Yeah. I mean, and I would still think that the Dodgers and the Braves have the chance because they are so much more talented than most of the other teams in the National League. You would think that they have a chance over June, July, August to stay afloat while other teams start to sink. But it has not been. Even though they're both winning, there have been problems on display for both teams that I think they'll have to decide. Do you ride it out? Do you go with the deadline and make a move? Are you worried that some of this is going to come back to haunt you in a critical playoff series?
I mean, meanwhile, the Phillies continue. As I was saying yesterday, their pitching has been phenomenal. Aaron Nola today, 7 shutout innings as they blank the Brewers 2-0. I mean, again, Wheeler, Nola, Suarez, Sanchez. I mean, they have really been very good. And then, I mean, seems like whoever they throw out as their fifth starter has been pretty good as well. So, the Phils are now 44-19. Yeah. 44-19.
One of the better first 50 game starts any National League team has had ever. I think they were 35-15 or 36-14 after their first 50, and they're on just a they're on a torrid pace, mm-hmm. Bill.
Yeah, absolutely are. All right, I want to get back. I want to get back to talking about the college football schedule and more. We'd love your thoughts. What do you think about the schedule? As we said, the first round of the 12-team playoffs will be two games on December 20th. That is a Friday night. Two games on Saturday. Excuse me. One game on Friday night, the 20th. Three games on Saturday, the 21st, and then there will be a 10-day break before two more games for the semifinals. No, the quarterfinals. My bad. The quarterfinals, which would include the Fiesta. What's the other one?
The four bowls in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, is it one New Year's Eve or is it two?
The Fiesta Bowl is New Year's Eve.
Are the other
then,
three?
And
New
then
Year's
it's a triple header on New Year's Day, and the triple header is the peach, the rose, and the sugar.
Okay,
three bowl
and those
games.
Those are Tuesday, Wednesday, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day,
yes.
And then you have another 9-day break.
Yes.
Before the semifinals start on the 9th.
There will be a semifinal, the Orange Bowl on January 9th will be one of the two semifinals. The other semifinal will be the Cotton Bowl on Friday, January 10th. There are NFL playoff triple headers on the 11th and 12th. So that's why college football did not want to try to play those games on the weekend. Instead, they're playing one of the two semifinals Thursday night, one of the two semifinals on Friday night.
So that means the playoffs are going to be played one game. There will be one day when we have Saturday college football in the playoffs. That will be December 21st because you have a Friday, then a Tuesday, Wednesday, then a Thursday, Friday, and then the championship game is 10 days later on a Monday.
There is a triple header on December 21st with three of the four first-round games. Two of those games will be so the college football playoffs will be broadcast on ABC and ESPN, with the exception of the two first-round games on December 21st, the noon game and the 4 p.m. game. ESPN sold those two games to TNT. Those games will be up against NFL games as well. Those are the two games that will be going on at the same time as Houston, Kansas City, and Baltimore, Pittsburgh on Saturday, the 21st. And so the rest of the games will be on ESPN and ABC, including the Friday night and Saturday night game in the first round, all four quarterfinal games, both semifinal games, and the championship game in Atlanta on January 20th.
And that means that the college football playoffs will be played on every day except a Sunday. A Monday, you know, you got a Monday championship, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
And the ESPN selling the two playoff games to TNT, I think, is an interesting idea because a lot of folks see the writing on the wall with TNT probably about to lose the NBA. Mm-hmm. TNT is in negotiation. There are four entities negotiating to be one of the NBA's three media partners. ESPN is locked in. It looks like NBC is locked in. And it looks like Amazon is going to be the third partner. That doesn't leave any NBA on TNT after 30-plus years of airing TNT, including inside the NBA,
right,
with Barkley and the gang. If TNT loses the NBA, I do wonder, and I don't know the economics of this, I do wonder if TNT would be interested in acquiring some of ESPN's college basketball products, because ESPN has so many.
Yeah, well, I mean, TNT does college basketball, you know, in March Madness.
They air the tournament, and
yeah,
if,
that's what I'm saying.
Yes, and if TNT has all this space on their schedule, if they lose the NBA regular season, because TNT shows the NBA two, three nights a week,
mm-hmm,
in the regular season. ESPN has a lot of quality basketball that's aired on ESPN Plus. I guess most of the major conference games make it to ESPN, ESPN2, or the respective networks, the SEC network or the ACC network. But there are games that fall through the cracks and go directly to ESPN Plus, especially in the non-conference, but even during conference play. Mm-hmm. And so I do wonder if some of those games, you know, if you're TNT and you're...
If you're TNT, I'm sure TNT would be interested.
I mean, if you're I mean, it would probably cost you a lot less than the, you know, $1.8 to $2.5 billion per network that's being talked about with this NBA deal. So yeah, I just wonder if there's a if there's a pivot there for TNT, because they are they are trying to stay in the game with college athletics. Not only do they have the NCAA tournament, they also acquired those two those two playoff games from ESPN that will air on December 21st.
All right, we will get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts on the timing, the spacing. How do you feel about when the playoff games are scheduled?
You think you think there's a chance we're talking about Auburn in one of these games this fall? You think it's a year too early for that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance because nobody's played yet, but I mean, we'll see. If you can win nine games, then I think you've got a real chance of getting in. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, here on The Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls as... we've been talking about the dates and sites set for the college football playoff. And just, you know, I was just wondering aloud, I mean, how does that affect the other bowl games? Because what we've had for the last few years, we've had so many bowl games, and they start around, usually the week before Christmas. You're getting a few bowl games in, and then they keep at least one a night going up to New Year's. If you move those games off New Year's Day, the ones that are normally on New Year's Day, which I think they should now, maybe they move them forward. Maybe they move them past New Year's, because if you move them back, you're putting two or three bowl games on some nights where it'd be really tough to do.
Is New Year's Eve related tourism part of it to some of these places?
It is
the thinking that, like, with the bowl games,
get folks down into Florida,
the bowl games that don't want to move off of New Year's Day, especially whether that's the Rose Bowl or the Peach Bowl, you know, they're thinking, well, these are also cities where there's a lot of New Year's Eve festivities, a lot of tourism, a lot of people coming in. We want to take advantage of that. I don't know
that there are as many people that go to Atlanta to watch the Peach drop just for New Year's as opposed to going to Florida
Atlanta's usually been a, you know, something of a hotbed for New Year. You know, maybe it's not New York City or something, but you know, I think people are still, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You raise an interesting question about, like, why they're so attached to that date. I mean, I can understand why you'd want to get off Saturday if the NFL's there, but otherwise I would think that Saturday would be a great time to do this.
All right, we'd love your thoughts. 334-321-1390. Again, when you call in, when it answers and you hear the swoosh sound, that means we've got you in queue, and we will get to the phones right now. And hello, who are we speaking to?
Anthony.
Hey, Anthony, how you doing?
Doing good. I want to ask you guys, now with the Pac-12, is UCLA and USC the big heavyweights left? Is the whole conference dissolved?
So what happened after UCLA and USC left was the Pac-12 was still negotiating for their media rights deal, and losing USC and UCLA, that weakened their leverage. And then subsequently the deals that they were able to present to teams like Washington, Stanford, Cal, Oregon, and the teams that left for the Big 12, those teams decided on their own they were better off in other leagues than they would be continuing as a conference without USC and UCLA. So now Stanford, Cal, and – or Stanford, Cal, the only –
That's it. Just two.
Those are two that joined the ACC?
Yeah, those two.
Stanford and Cal join the ACC. Washington and Washington, Oregon, and USC and UCLA are in the Big Ten, and you've got Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah shifting over to the Big 12, leaving Oregon State and Washington State as the lone teams.
It's the Pac-2 right now
that have not affiliated with a new conference.
All right, so what I want to ask you, where I'm going with this, what becomes a Rose Bowl as far as bowl games, if that's the case? What do you do with a Rose Bowl?
I don't think Rose Bowl's too worried about it because they're going to be a playoff game from now on. So the conference, the historic conference attachments to these bowl games are less important than they used to be because they're going to be serving as quarterfinals or semifinals. Okay. There are six bowl games that'll be
rotating between either being a quarterfinal or semifinal site, could be the side of the national championship as well.
And the Rose Bowl, I think, will always be a quarterfinal game because they don't want to move to later in the month of January.
Right.
So they'll always be one of the four quarters. But I don't think the Big Ten versus Pac-12 part of it is going to be as important moving forward.
Okay, well, that explains it then. If they're going to be always a semifinal, or perhaps a final, or some kind of way tied into the playoffs, then that take care of that. I was just wondering, if not, then what he's going to do with that. But you just answered it, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Anthony.
It's not going to be a Washington State versus Oregon State battle to be the representative to take on the Big Ten.
And as delightful as that would be.
And
as Dan said, it'll always be a quarterfinal. That doesn't mean that the championship game won't be held there,
right,
but it won't be called the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I used to know how they were deciding the national championship game site every year. Is it one of those six could also get the championship game, or a city's going to bid on it every year?
I think cities are going to bid. It could be someone other than those six, but I would say you're probably going to have to come up with a pretty good bid.
Well, Atlanta is going to host the first national championship game of the 12-team playoff era, and they'll also have a Peach Bowl.
Right, so there'll be a Peach Bowl and a championship game both played there at Mercedes-Benz.
Yes, about 3 weeks apart. I believe the Peach Bowl is the Peach Bowl is one of the three New Year's Day quarterfinal games, and the national championship game will be about 3 weeks later.
Yeah, so
it's going to be fun, Bill.
I wish they could just be playing, you know, on Saturdays but I understand why they're not.
I think it takes all of the steam out of the other bowl games, though. Like, I mean, we used to do, in my family, and I'm sure people do, like the bowl pick'ems.
Oh, yeah,
the survivor
absolutely.
Pools, right? You know, stuff like that. That's over, right? Aren't you just filling out a bracket for your college football playoff now? Like, are you still doing a bowl pool?
I mean, considering, as we said, we were trying to find dates for the rest of the bowls, and there's nowhere to find them.
And not to mention how many of these teams are only taking half their roster. Like, you're picking with – how do I pick with confidence in a game where all the starters are sitting out, Bill? Like, you want to pick that game with any confidence at all when it's a bunch of dudes that are in the transfer portal or going to the – No, I think that the bowl confidence pool thing, that's over. It's maybe there's our answer right there. But it's over. And it's got to be. I think people are going to be doing college football brackets. I think you fill out your 12 team or your. I mean, it's not going to be March Madness because there's not as many teams, and it's not going to have the same sort of potential for craziness. But I mean, I don't foresee a scenario where people are eagerly following the non-playoff bowls this fall.
By the way, the 25 and 26 schedules are already out there with the quarterfinals, semifinals, and championship sites for the 2025 college football playoff schedule. Cotton, Orange, Rose, and Sugar will host the quarterfinals with the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Eve. The other three, once again, on New Year's Day. Semifinals will be January 8th and 9th at the Fiesta and Peach Bowls. And then the national championship game going to be played at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. So that is the schedule for next year. So we already have We already have that one set. Then they will announce the next. I mean, you know, it's gonna the quarters and semis are always going to be those same six bowls. It's just they will rotate as to who's getting the quarters and the semis. 334-321-1390. Love for you to join in here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Why don't we go ahead and get to our final break? It's actually on time this time. We'll do that, and you've still got time to join in as we wind things down here on the Wednesday Drive.
At Reynolds Appart of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon, our final segment of the day. Again, our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us in hour number one. The news of the day, Auburn with co-head coaches for softball as they hire away the Team Malvo from Tennessee, Chris and Kate Malvo. Chris has been the...
not to be confused with Team Loudmouth, which is us, right? You got Team,
no, that,
team
that
Malvo.
Is true.
Team Malvo.
Yeah, Chris, very well known as a hitting coach. I mean, he was at Missouri they were at Missouri for 3 years before they came to Tennessee, and I believe the team's batting average improved dramatically each year. And they've been one of the top hitting teams in the country the last couple of years at Tennessee. So that's something that was a big, big problem for Auburn this past year. Their pitching was really good all year long. But, I mean, so much pressure on the pitchers when you feel like you have to throw a shutout every time out to have a chance to win. So it'll be interesting to see now and see how quickly they can go out and – either flip some talent or bring some transfers in.
Oh, certainly. I mean, we were preaching patience before we found out it was going to be Team Malvo. Like, I just think this league is loaded, and I would caution folks against expecting overwhelming results right now when you have
overwhelming. I would think though, you would expect with proven SEC coaches. That you'd be able to bring some players in because opportunity is here.
Well, you can finish in last and still make the tournament.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's the kind of league we're talking about here. So, I mean, I think the expectations should still be they'll find talent, they'll be able to develop the talent they have on board. But it is just, I mean, Jason said it, and he would know. Jason said there is not a more competitive league in any sport in college athletics right now,
agreed,
than softball in the SEC.
There's not a tougher. There's not a better league in any sport than the SEC in softball.
Sure,
because you have Texas and Oklahoma who are joining the conference officially in 25 days, playing for the national title.
And the SEC could have four or five teams in the college football playoff this fall.
Right.
The SEC could have six or seven teams in the preseason top 25 in men's college basketball. The SEC could be a better league in women's ball than it is in men's basketball, with more teams closer to the top of the sport in women's college basketball than it is in men's college basketball, and all that, and baseball. Bill, how many SEC teams made
11. Eleven teams made regionals.
And having said all that, softball still probably the toughest, most loaded of all of them. And yeah, good luck to Team Malvo. I really do. You know, I'll send the email in the next day or so, trying to get them on the show. I think it'd be really fun to get to talk to Team Malvo at some point and welcome them into Auburn, because it's a unique challenge, and Auburn has found a unique pair to try to solve that problem.
Yeah, that announcement came a little earlier today. So let's see. I'll read you some of the info from the release from Kirk Sampson at Auburn earlier today. They helped lead the Tennessee program to back-to-back SEC regular season titles the last 2 years. They were in the College World Series last year. Tennessee had 136 wins over the last three seasons, tied for the 10th most wins nationally, second most by an SEC team. This year they were 44-12 and another super regional after making the College World Series a year ago. And Chris, known as one of the top offensive minds in softball, had six players get all SEC this past year, including, top three of the top five single season home run records coming under Chris Malvo. So, again, some very impressive numbers. Kate had been on the staff along with Chris, was elevated to an assistant coach ahead of this year. She worked with their catchers and base runners, and last year helped their first-year catcher to first-team All-SEC. So, very well-respected coaches coming in. It is a little unusual, but like we said, it's not unprecedented because they're at Tennessee. The Weekleys had been co-head coaches for a couple of decades. So that's big news there from Auburn. It'll be interesting to watch. I mean, the portals are open now for softball and baseball. We've talked more about the outgoing. We're waiting to see, who Auburn brings in for visits for both baseball and softball. So that'll be something else to be following while football recruiting is really moving at a very rapid pace right now with camps coming up, as Jason Caldwell was saying, 7-on-7 camps coming in. Some of the top schools from around the South will be in Auburn showcasing their skill players here on the 7-on-7 camps, which are just getting started.
Yeah, we'll talk with Ferguson tomorrow. I think we should have a Justin Ferguson visit.
Yeah, I was wondering if you wanted.
I think the Auburn Observer's in the house tomorrow. We'll find out. If not, we'll probably get a now the phones work. We'll see if we can get him in on the phone. But I think he's in town.
Well, that's good. I was just wondering, since I'm not here Friday. I mean, Don can be here Friday.
I'll talk to Ferg about if he wants to pull double duty or something like that, whatever works. You're seeing the Rolling Stones.
That is right.
On
Friday.
Got to
see them before they're gone. Of course, I thought that 30 years ago.
What's your what's like one Rolling Stones song people should listen to in the next like 24 hours? Old or new, go nuts.
I don't know. I mean, Satisfaction is just okay. It's hard to top that. I
do like Miss You a lot. I know it's too disco-y for some folks. I get it. It's like picking I Was Made for Loving You as your favorite Kiss song or something, right? But it's a good one.
There are plenty. If they come close to playing most of their greatest hits, we'll be around. We'll be there for a long night. All right. We are out of time, though, here on the Wednesday Drive. Yep, hopefully Justin Ferguson in the house tomorrow. But you can join us regardless when we come back on Thursday. That's going to do it for the Wednesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.